Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Did you know that when you roll over your 401k, after-tax contributions can only be rolled into an IRA or a retirement plan that keeps track of the taxable and non-taxable parts? Talk to the 401k rollover experts at KPP Financial. They'll help you make the best possible choices. Just click on Contact Steve or Justin and type 401k rollover on investtalk.com. Now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and it is Thursday, August 4th, 2016, and of course, you're listening to Invest Talk, and I thank you very much for listening. And of course, we're all about trying to move you above average, to make you a better-than-average investor. That's what this show is all about. If you're willing to add to your toolbox and become a more committed investor, you're going to want to learn about charting. We talk about charting on the show almost every day. Now, you probably figured it, since our phone number is the word has the word chart in it, 800-99, you know, has the word chart to call us. So you figure we put some importance on that on charting. And charting is a technical analysis is another word for charting. And I always remind you that charting is skill, and it's an art, not a science. It's not a science. Every chart looks different. There are endless numbers of indicators that are touted that will work. Everybody thinks that. However, reading a chart is not a science. It's an art. So many people ask me how to identify support and resistance levels. So I'm going to give you three types of those levels right now. And you should learn these. Moving averages. These are simply lines that are comprised of an average of the price of a stock over a period of days. For example, a 200-day moving average is the average closing price of the stock over the past 200 days. Doesn't necessarily have to be the closing, but that's what they use a lot. Some moving averages mean more than others. 20-day moving average, 50-day moving average, 100-day moving average. And they can be used and are used as support and resistance lines when a stock moves up to it or breaks above it or below it. Fibonacci retracements. Just like everything in life, stocks move in a pretty relatively predictable pattern, such as a wave, a flower petal, even a hurricane. Fibonacci levels are calculated using a charting tool that connects the highs and lows in any move, up and down. Fibonacci levels. Pivot points. These are simply previous highs and lows on a chart, and they change direction. More volume that is associated with a peak or a valley or a pivot point, the more important they become. So these are some of the ways you can analyze charts, okay? There's lots and lots of different ways, much more than that. These are just three simple ones. You should study these factors, and you'll have to decide for yourself which ones you think tend to be true. And that's all you can do. They tend to repeat themselves. And then because of that tendency, you can use them as an investor. Do you have a question about charting or any questions about investing or managing your money? Check in now. Our number, our 24-hour listener line number is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I'm calling in with a real estate question. I have a building that is mixed use to residential units and two commercial. Wanted to see if it was necessary to form an LLC to liability protection or if property insurance would be sufficient. I've been hearing different answers from different people, so I was wondering, because it has commercial units, does that make it automatically required to form an LLC? But I think if I just have adequate property insurance, wouldn't that be enough? Thank you for your show.
Now, you're probably going to get different opinions on this, but I do think having liability insurance and fire insurance on the buildings is enough, but you do have to carry pretty high levels, and that's why I always recommend umbrella policies. But you'll also hear the argument that if you have an LLC or S corporation, that gives you an extra layer of protection against people trying to sue you and get a hold of your property or take some of your wealth away from you. And to a certain extent, that is true, but so it depends on the state. California, there's not a lot of protection in there. There's not forming an LLC. But if you're just going to be a property owner and rent it, I always used insurance, liability and fire insurance for protection. I think as long as you carry enough, that should be sufficient. Talk to your accountant. You know, it depends on how complex and how wealthy you are, how much insurance you should carry. You need to protect yourself. Let's also try to answer one of the questions sent to us via text message. Steve, I'm intrigued by Square. Its earnings per share increased from Square, SQ, Square. Okay? I am intrigued by Square. Its earnings per share increased by minus 29 cents, losing 29 cents, okay, per share, to losing 11 cents a share. It appears the company has a lack of competition in the current marketplace. Share price floating around $10, just had its IPO last November. What are your thoughts? Now, everybody who's ever listened to the show in length of time, what do you think I think about a company not making money? I don't like to own companies that don't make money. Square, everybody, is that company that provides point-of-sale software that manages receipts, inventory, sales reports with analytical feedback. And the most famous thing is they have that little square you can plug into your phone or your iPad and you slide a credit card through it, Square. It's a little white square thing. And you can charge people for your services or goods. They have never made money. They're not going to make money this year, not going to make money next year. They are going to lose less money. Whoop-de-doo. I don't like companies that don't make money. It's a fairly new IPO. It came out at 9, and that was, what, December 2015. And today it's $11.32. So do you want to be owner of a company that doesn't make money? For me, the answer is no. I'm going to wait till it makes money. Now, sales are growing 40% per quarter, sales, but they're still not going to make money yet. Had a big up day today because it was up 8% today because it came out with losses, less losses than anticipated. But still, for me, I don't buy companies that don't make money. Before today, the stock was at $10. A month ago, the stock was at $8.50. Remember, it IPO'd at $9 in December. Not for me. I don't really care for it. Let's go to Bruce in Fresno. How you doing, Bruce?
Real good, Steve. Wondering about Viacom, V-I-A-B.
Okay, Viacom, huh? Class B shares. It's on the NASDAQ. Let's take a look. I just pulled it up on the chart. Now let's take a look at the fundamentals. I'm sure everybody knows who Viacom is, holding company engaged in cable television, films, you know, makes movies, distribution and music, publishing, that kind of thing. They make good, solid money. They've always made good, solid money. They're going to make less money this year. They made $5.44 last year. This year, they're going to make $4.36, so that's a 20% reduction, and then a 10% increase next year back to $4.80. So it's a good, solid company, $17 billion, pays a 3.7% dividend, and it's fairly inexpensive still at a $43 per share. Because, you know, if $4.80, that means the P is going to be about 9. And the five-year range is 6 to 18, so it's on the lower end of that P.E. range. And I don't think the company is hurting in any way. It does have a lot of debt, and that's the biggest worry about it, Bruce. But the cash flow is huge. $18 a share cash flow means they can pay a lot of debt. So what did they, you know, what are they buying? They probably bought content or bought companies that make, you know, they're probably trying to grow their business by buying assets. That's what I would look for. See, what's that debt, and why do you have it, and what did you spend the money on? And it does look like to me they've been buying things. Like they recently bought Soul Train from Intermedia Partners. Yeah. So I think it's a good, solid company for long term. It's a blue chip, Bruce. So you kind of buy it for that dividend. You don't necessarily buy it for the growth. Okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. It's a pretty good price at right now. It's at $43. That's not bad. It was $31 in February, everybody, but now it's at $43. But that's still a good price based on the earnings and PE. The first step in building the retirement portfolio that's a right fit for you is to understand your risk tolerance, how much risk you're willing to take, how much risk you want to take. What's your comfort level? So how do you do that? Well, we have a risk tool on our website. You can use it for free. It's a free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It's quick. It's just a little few questions. It's free and gives you some good, solid information. Click on the InvestTalk tab.
Now, let's get back to question and answer time. 888-99-CHART. Here's Steve Peasley with more InvestTalk.
Hey, Steve and Justin. My name's Tom. I'm a podcast listener from New York. I was looking at Tahoe Resources, ticker T-A-H-O. I wanted to know your thoughts on the company and if it's a good time to buy. Thanks a lot. I love the show.
Okay, Tahoe Corporation, Tahoe Resources, Inc., I should say. It's a $4.7 billion company, so it's a mid-cap company, engaged in exploration and development of silver properties, primarily in Guatemala. Interesting. That part I don't really care for, by the way. Primarily in one space, Guatemala, in a third world country, where politics could really destroy your company, if that's your primary source of income. That would be my biggest fear, my biggest danger. Having said that, they're growing 50 to 100% sales per quarter. They're going to make 66 cents this year and then 81 cents next year. And this year is a 65% increase. Next year is a 23% increase. The fundamentals look pretty good. Management owns 3%. Mutual funds are buying. But it's a little bit expensive. It's going to make 81 cents. It's a $15 stock. That means, what, it's about 19 PE. But the growth rate is pretty high, so it justifies that expense. Now, because of the primarily being in Guatemala, that would turn me off. Everything else, I have no problems with. But that one political risk, remember there's different kinds of risks for stocks, and this one would be political. How stable, and this is where I'd focus my attention, how stable is the Guatemalan government? You know, have they ever taken over corporations, especially with their natural resources? Very common for third world countries to take over companies' natural resources. In years and years and years, they might get something for what they took. But, you know, you destroy the company. So that would be my biggest fear. But other than that, all the fundamentals look pretty good. Okay? Investing in pension funds. Big time gamble. That's going to be our main talking point today. Other talking points? The jobs report comes out tomorrow, the jobs report for July. Do you remember what June's was and you remember what May's was? Well, let's talk about the other months and see what we're going to have, see what we think is going to happen. Wealthy universities don't always help their poor students. There was a study done of the 67 wealthiest nonprofit universities. These are big name universities, okay, and colleges. What do they do with their endowments? How much do they get? What are they doing with it? And ways to increase and or protect your retirement savings. I got some warnings and some hints on how you can increase your retirement savings and protect it to some degree. You got to be careful, and it's going to be different than you think it's going to be. You know, every day almost seems like every week I talk about retirement savings and investments and all that stuff. Yes, true. But I always try to put a little different spin on it because I'm always trying to get everybody to do it. Save for retirement because we as a society are so far behind. So far behind. Do you know how much you're paying in banking fees? How much to have in an emergency fund? How much life insurance is too much? Should you even have life insurance? Should you sell your home and move to a smaller one or a cheaper one? Let's talk about it. My direct line is 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to John in San Jose. How you doing, John?
Good. How's it going today?
Good, good. You want to talk about gold?
Yeah, I do. I've got a position in AUI. I wanted to get your thoughts and opinion on it.
It's Yamada Gold. I like it. I like the gold mining companies. We have a number of them, have had for some time. And Yamada Gold is one of the better ones, I think. It's a $5.5 billion company. They're going to make 15 cents this year, then 20 cents next year after losing 8 cents last year. So it's a big turnaround for them and for all gold companies because gold prices, you know, have done well. It's not cheap, though. It's a $5.83 stock, and they're going to make 20 cents. So you're looking at a PE of, you know, close to what, 28. But, you know, I still think if you can find good, solid gold mining companies, I still think you need to be in them. One of the reasons why, John, is not because of the gold and the gold companies itself, but because of what else assets are out there. Think about people in Europe and Japan, and even England today, when they keep knocking down the interest rates to where you can't make money in a money market or a CD or even bonds, you can't hardly make any money. So where are you going to move to? You're going to move to stocks? What happens when stocks get over prices and stock markets start to fall? And stocks are kind of pricey right now. So where else can you go for protection? And I have a feeling that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of people moving toward gold for protection, you know, against fear, against overprices, against not making any money, against countries around the world destroying their currencies, you know, by printing more and more and more money. Eventually, inflation is going to take hold, and that's only good for gold. So I like the whole area right now. Not forever, because I'm not a gold bug. John, I am not. I know it sounds like I am, but I'm not. I just think it's an opportunity. I think you hold on to it for a while until we see, you know, I think it's got a little more ways to go. I really do. Gold. So I like the amount of gold. Okay? Thanks, John.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. We didn't tell you what the market did today. The Dow was down 3, the Nasdaq was up 6, and the S&P was flat. Have you ever seen such a boring market? The market has been very, very non-volatile. This will not stand. It's just not normal for the market to be so flat for such a long time. About a month now, a month and a half, done nothing. Just flat. Flat to a little bit on the downside. But that is not going to continue. It's just not in the nature of the stock market, everybody. So don't expect that to go forever. Now, which direction is it going to go? You got two schools of thought. Some think the market's going to rise. Some think it's going to fall. You know, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could tell you. If I knew for sure where it was going, I'd be betting the farm, but I don't know for sure. So you always hedge your bets. That's what I do. I hedge my bets. So, you know, it's just prudent. Anyways, let's talk. We're going to talk about investing in pension funds. Is it time to take that gamble? And I'm going to tell you, no. Don't buy pension funds. You can buy, you know, you can invest in pension funds, you know. You can invest in them through ETFs and mutual funds. The problem is, for years and years and years and years, the pension funds were very, very, had very, very steady returns. Excuse me. Because most of the money they invest in bonds. And they averaged, before 1995, they're averaging like 7.5% per year. The yields on these pension funds. 7.5% per year. Because bonds, for 30 years, they peaked. And then the interest rates started fall. So you get long-term bonds, and the value of the bonds go up, and you get pretty decent returns. Now we're at the opposite end of this, and so what happens is people look back and say, oh, look at these pension funds. They've done so well in the last 10, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. You can go back for a long time and say, wow, they've done very, very well. But you can't do that. That's investing in the rearview mirror. Now that they can't get those really high returns in bonds anymore, These funds are turning more and more and more to more risky investments. Now, how can you tell that? You can tell that by the standard deviation of these funds. The standard deviation is a measure of risk, okay? It used to be, before 1995, 2000, about 6. Since 2000, it's 17%. From 6% to 17%, meaning up and down and up and down, they're getting more and more volatile, more and more risky. So don't fall in love with the yields on these pension funds that you can buy. Don't fall in love with them because you're looking in the rearview mirror and not the windshield of your investment horizon. We're open to your money questions and comments. I'm going to do it every day. 888-99-CHART is how you can get through right now. I have a new date in August to meet with the Skype and telephone people. That's August 10th. To get on the calendar, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. Then portfolio review.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and remember, no matter where you live in the United States, you can have your retirement portfolio reviewed by a registered investment advisor at no cost. Steve does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. The next date coming up is August 10th. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com and then portfolio review. Now let's get back to Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. How do you avoid the common mistakes that cost people money? Let's talk about it. Our Invest Talk number, 888-99-CHART. We're ready for your call right now.
Hey guys, this is Dave from Pennsylvania. I had a question regarding First Solar, FSLR. I've been watching this for a while now, and it looks like it took right around a 12% drop today, at least at the time I'm calling. But I've been waiting for this to fall below 44, and it did. But I'm not able to really see any reason for the sell-off, to be honest with you. So I'm a little concerned about that. I'm happy it dropped, but I don't know why. I see it hit 50-day moving average recently, but then again, it did the same thing in July twice that I can see. So I don't know if it just triggered sales that happened. I don't know. So I'm just wondering if you could take a look at that and see, is this a time to buy or do I wait a few days for this? I was looking to putting in a 3-5% position, hold it for at least a year or so, maybe possible trade if it does shoot up. But I'd be interested in your opinion on that. Thank you.
It's pretty simple. It was all about earnings. Everybody, if you just watch earnings really tell the story. It's not a perfect story. It's not a perfect synergy between the stock price and earnings, but it's pretty good. The powers that be at First Solar, which is FSLR, and of course they manufacture solar cell modules, residential, commercial, for markets in the U.S., Europe, and Asia, and they guided to lower earnings going forward, and the stock dropped 12%. They said they're going to make less money. And if you look at the earnings estimates, they're going to make $4.25 this year, which is 21% less than last year. And then another reduction of 30% next year, $2.97. So that's why they came out today. They said, here's our earnings report, but we think we're going to make less money. Boom. Any CEO, CFO says, we're going to make less money in the future. In any way, shape, or form he says it, the stock is going to get hit. And that's what happened. Now, you said you might want to buy it for a trade. It has hit the low 40s and has bounced from the low 40s in 2014, 2015, and now here it is 2016. So you want to see if it holds. You just want to see if it's going to stop falling. You don't want to try to, quote-unquote, catch a falling knife as it's falling, because you're going to get cut. Wait till the stock's falling. One day today, it took a big hit. Let's see it calm down. Wait a few days, a couple, few weeks. See if it can hold the low 40s. And when it starts back up from the low 40s, that's when you should jump in. If it doesn't and it continues falls, you just be patient. There's no reason to be in a rush to get in it. FSLR is the name of the, is the symbol, First Solar, everybody. Good solid company, doesn't have much debt. $4.4 billion, pretty low PE, but not based on next year's earnings. You look at now, it looks low. But that's this year's earnings. Next year's earnings is, doesn't look so low. Okay? Okay, let's talk about jobs. The jobs report's going to come out tomorrow, and this is for July. And if you remember right, by the way, the experts are expecting about 185,000 new jobs, and the unemployment rate to go down to 4.8%. Isn't that good news? Don't you feel confident and happy? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the June's number? It was 287,000 jobs. That's really a big number. Do you remember May's? 11,000 jobs. I kind of think both those months are kind of outliers. I kind of think you can kind of toss those or average them, and that might be more of the truth. Now, I'm not too positive on the future of jobs for the rest of this year, but the experts are thinking about 175,000 jobs per month till the end of the year. I'm thinking that's optimistic. I hope that's true. And why I think that is because of GDP growth. GDP growth for the first quarter was 8%. 8/10 of 1%. And that was down from, and they just lowered it from 1.1%. Because they just announced the second quarter GDP, and it was 1.2% when they expected it to be twice that. And then I look at the durable goods report, and it fell 4%. Huge number. Fell 4% in the recent month. These are not boding well for strong job growth out there. It's just not. So it's not saying we're going to recession or anything like that, but it certainly doesn't. You know, we have to pick up our GDP growth. Now, everybody's thinking, you know, well, that's a good unemployment rate, 4.8%. It is 4.9. They think it's going to go down to 4.8. But you know the U6 number? That's the U6 number is part-time employment for people who want really full-time. Part-time employment, people working part-time who are considered working, but how many of those want full-time jobs? And it's 9.6%. Well, you can't just look at that number and say, is that good or bad? You got to look at it in relationship to other time periods. What, for instance, before the Great Recession, what was the pre-recession number of U6 part-time work, part-timers looking for full-time work? It was 7.9%. Now it's 9.6. So we've had a recovery, a long-term recovery from the recession. And I think it's one of the weakest recoveries of a recession ever. Do you remember the recovery from the dot-com recession? Everybody thought that was weak. And it was reported in the news all the time how weak the recession recovery is. Do you hear that reported now? Because this is the weakest one we've ever had. I don't hear them talking about how weak this is. I hear them talking about, oh, look at that unemployment rate. Well, our GDP number, we're not growing very fast, and we've increased our debt hugely. What's wrong with this picture? And it's not just here in the U.S., everybody. It's everywhere. It's everywhere in the world. What is wrong with this picture? My personal feeling is that we're going about fixing it wrong. This QE, lower interest rates, make them negative, is not working. It hasn't worked now for several years. Why are we keep doing it? Only in the U.S. have we started to talk about increasing the interest rate. We did a quarter point in December, but that's it. Oh, can't do it anymore. That's it. We can't do it more. Well, Great Britain announced, was it yesterday, that they're going to lowering their interest rate. Lower the interest rate because they want to spark their economy. And their economy is growing about like ours, by the way. And they're lowering their interest rates because of the Brexit, right? They left the EU and they're worried. What if the Brexit actually boosts the economy? I think that's just as probable as not. I think our central banks are not doing a very good job. Now, the problem there is our central banks are not the only ones that should be doing the job. There should be fiscal changes as well. There should be something else. And I'm not pretending I know the answer. I don't. But there's things that the government can do, or governments around the world, they can do other than just lowering interest rates. That seems to be their only solution. And it's not. It's the only one they want to look at right now because it's the easiest. It's not politically damaging. No politician loses their job. Anyways, KPP Financial has an assortment investment program designed to fit every life situation and goal. There's our disciplined equity, which is focused growth for maximum returns. There's our balanced income program. There's our dynamic growth. We have different programs, different risk profiles to fit everybody's needs, hopefully. So if you want to see more about it, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Why not join our Invest Talk insiders? There's a new info sheet on real estate investing for income. These are quick 1- and 2-page reads on popular money topics. It's free to join. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. It's Katie from Green Bay. Question about HFC, Holly Frontier, and I'm short-term holding. I currently have it in my portfolio. And just wondering where you think it'll go and what might be a good time to get out. Thanks for your help. Love the show. Bye.
Okay, even though I'm from Southern California, Green Bay Packers are my favorite professional football team. I have 5 of them, by the way. San Diego Chargers, number 2. Anyways, even though they disappoint me every year. Holly Frontier Corporation, it is a $4.5 billion company engaged in production of high-valued light petroleum products such as gasoline, diesel fuel, and jet fuel. So they refine these products, refine them. So lower oil prices helps them, right? Because they're buying the oil, the crude, and then they're refining it. So they want lower prices, even though they can still maintain their profit margins by just increasing their prices. But there's competition. They made $4.57 a share in 2015. In 2016, they're only going to make 81 cents a share. Then it's going to huge bounce back in 2017, $2.34. That huge swing is something I want to know why. Why the big, huge swing? But based on next year's earnings of $2.34, the stock is fairly inexpensive with 12 PE because it's a $25.61 stock right now. It looks like it's bouncing off a low, about $22.50. It looks like it's bouncing off that low. It pays a 5.2% dividend. That's probably pretty solid. I don't see why it wouldn't be. They don't have very much debt. So it's a good, solid, mid-sized company paying a decent dividend. So I think this is a good place to pick it up. I see no reason why this is not a good place. I would like to know why the big drop this year earnings and the big recovery next year earnings. Why? What is causing that? But from the numbers I can read quickly, it looks pretty good. And the chart looks like it's bottom to me, and it's breaking above its 20-day moving average, and it looks like it's starting to recover to me. And it's going up on higher and higher volume, so people are liking what they see. Okay? It's time for Invest Talk 101, a lesson in everyday investing. Okay, let's quiz you first. Is it important to not only understand how to analyze fundamentals of individual stocks, but to also understand the economic fundamentals that affect the future direction of the business activity? In other words, the economic cycle, because you can look at the fundamentals of a company, you look at the technicals of a company, but the economy is going to hell, you're not going to make money. So it is. The answer is you really got to take a look at the overall fundamentals. And one of the basic ways to do that is gross domestic product, which I just talked about, came out at 1.1%. Do you know how it's figured, gross domestic product, GDP? There's only four things: consumption, investment, government spending, and net exports. And the largest part of the GDP is consumer consumption. Consumption. And what drives that? Incomes for people, savings rates, wealth effect, balance sheet, personal balance sheets, confidence. Those affect consumers and what they spend. So you kind of want, you kind of watch. Remember, 66, 70% of our economy is that consumer. Does he have income? Is there jobs being produced? You know, what is he spending? It has, does he have more money now than 10 years ago to spend? The answer is probably no. Also, the investment component, remember, it's consumption, investment, government spending, and net export. The investment portion is corporations. Think about corporations investing their money in upgrading factories and equipment, okay, building software, that kind of stuff. Now, that's not the biggest portion, but it's part of it. And then you got government spending. Everybody knows, but government spends our tax dollars, everybody. So they take away our money to go spend it somewhere. And how much of that really actually works into the economy as opposed to getting wasted? That's a big issue. And then there's net exports. Net exports means, to figure the GDP, we buy things from foreign countries. So when we buy their stuff, that helps their GDP. Okay, theirs. But it takes away from ours. Our exports help our GDP. But the imports take away. So the net export, the net result is what's important. And we have been exporting much less than we import for decades. So it's been a drag on our economic growth. You got to keep track of these kinds of numbers to see fundamentally, are the corporations going to make more money or less money? What's the economies look like around the world? And there you look at the IMF, International Monetary Fund. They do estimates country by country, and then they have an overall world GDP growth, and you find out, try to learn what's going on in the rest of the world, because it's not just about us anymore. We are very important. Don't get me wrong. And we can and have shown that we can survive on our own. We just can't survive as strong as we used to be able to. That's Investtalk 101, everybody. If you have any more questions about it or you just want to talk about anything financial, give me a call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Before the end of the show, I'm hoping to get to what are the universities, the wealthy universities doing with their endowment? Are they helping students with that money? And ways to protect and grow your income in retirement. Some basic things you could do. You can still get through with your question. We still have time. 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T, is our anytime number. Or you can send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Steve button.
Coming up on Invest Talk, answers to your questions, any money matter, comparing load and no load mutual funds, how to gauge your needs in retirement, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Steve. I was hoping you'd look at the QRVO and give me an opinion.
Okay, that's Corvo Inc. And they took a big beating today, down 3%. They've been taken, got beat up badly yesterday, and then again today. And it's a $6.8 billion company, manufactures RF integrated circuits used in mobile devices, base stations, wireless networks, and metering devices. And it's all about... It's all about for Quovo, and the reason why it got beat up recently, it's all about its margins. Because they reacted strongly and quickly to the sales reduction at Apple. And they did a good job reacting, but then it hurt their margins. And that's going to hurt their margins the next quarter and the quarter after. Even though their earnings beat expectations, they did well. There's nothing wrong with what they did. but the margin squeeze, in other words, our profit margins is what we're talking about, got squeezed, and that's hurting, that hurt the stock. Investors hate to see when the margins go down. Now, this might be an opportunity, Mike. I don't. Are you an owner, or do you want to buy it?
I bought some today.
Okay. It might work out for you because their sales are still going to grow, and the i7, the iPhone 7 is going to probably, start to expand their margins. It's going to take 6 months to a year to see that come out of the numbers. But so I think it might have been a bit early. You might want to wait till the stock settled down before you jumped in. But this pullback is what I talk about, Mike, when I say, well, wait for a pullback. This is the kind of thing I'm looking for when I say that. The pullback is a temporary thing because of a margin squeeze, even though they're still growing their sales and they're gonna, their earnings are still going up. So, and it's a fairly low PE ratio. They're gonna make $5.89 next year. It's a $53 stock, so that's a 9 PE. And their 5-year average is the lowest as it is, 8. So you might work out for you, Mike. It might. But I probably would wait a few days to see if it will settle down and start trading sideways before I would jump in. But it might work out.
I was just hoping for like a dead cat bounce for maybe a couple of bucks. Do you see that on the trade?
You might get that. You might get it. Because it's not that bad of news. It's not. So you might get it. That's a possibility. Mike, appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Wealthy universities don't always help poor students. What do they do with that? We're talking about endowment. There was a study done on the 67 wealthiest private nonprofit universities, and these are big colleges, universities. You've heard about all their names. Everybody recognizes them. 35 of them spent less than 5% of their endowment money in 2013. That's when this study was conducted. It went all the way back then. They spent less than 5% of their endowment money to help pay students with tuition. 5%. Now, endowment money is money donated to colleges, and like, who has a big Harvard has like $57 billion, some huge amount of money. They have endowments. This is money given to them, donated to them. It's tax-free, and earnings from these endowments are tax-free as well for these colleges. So us consumers, us taxpayers are getting screwed by these big university endowments, and they're really not helping students very much. 5%? Come on. You can't pay more than that. And at the same time, over that same period of time they studied this, they keep raising tuition above inflation rate. So who's making out here? Now, you got to look at both sides of the equation. When somebody gives money to a college, they usually give it for a specific purpose. In other words, the college has to use it for a specific purpose. So they may not have all the freedom they would like to use it to help with tuition for the lower income students. So you got to think of that too. So they didn't study that part. I love when they do these studies and they don't study both sides of the issue. They don't report. They may study it, they only focus on one side. I think that's kind of unfair. Just my opinion. But still, it certainly seems like they should do more. Our time is up. A reminder, if you have a question about any money topic, from 401k rollovers to real estate, you can contact me directly. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's go ahead and do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-400-8400. 855-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.